This is program C-1097. This is our fifth day that we've been looking at the great Jewish-Roman fight or war that broke out in 66 because of the atrocities of the prefect Florus trying to pick a fight with the Jewish people so that he could kind of plunder them in his position there. But things really got out of hand rapidly, because we have the spread of fighting between Jews and Gentiles going all over the Eastern Mediterranean during 66. And the legate Cestius from Antioch, who has control for Rome of the entire eastern end of the Roman Empire, when he tried to bring a legion down to quell some of this, that legion pretty much got annihilated. And Jerusalem falls completely into the hands of these rebels. And there is a declaration, I suppose, of their independence from Rome. Now, many of the Jewish people don't want anything to do with that. They were perfectly fine having a long-standing relationship with Rome, and they abandon the city of Jerusalem once they see things heading in a very, very destructive direction. And so we have a man who is appointed by Nero in the fall of 66, named Vespasian, to come to the Judean area, to the area of the Jewish people, and to start putting this thing down, get it in control. Now, he has a very fine line to walk, because, and this is something a lot of Christians do not fully understand, he is working with Jewish leadership to put down a Jewish rebellion. So you've got both sides that have Jews on them. And so King Agrippa II is assisting in whatever way he can with Vespasian to get things back under control again for the benefit of the Jewish population. Because until this thing is taken care of, things cannot go back to their normal procedures. And King Agrippa II is charged by Rome with taking care of all things religious for the Jews. So it's in his best interest to get this taken care of. So they start, that is the Romans, start by putting down all of the rebellious areas in the fringe of Judean type of control. And that would include the Galilee, the area up in the north where there's a lot of Jewish people. And they are, some of them, rioting against any continued Roman control of their lives. So the last of the cities of the Jews that are put down by the Romans, that is brought back under control, happens in October of 67. So it really doesn't take the Romans very long at all to get this thing back under control there. And this city was called Giscala. It's about 12 miles north and a little bit west of the north end of the Sea of Galilee. And there was a rebel leader there by the name of John. Now, the reason this guy is important is because our other person that we've been talking about, the man who provides a lot of this testimony that we read, that would be Josephus, when he was the Jewish commander of the Galilee, John of Giscala gave him nothing but trouble, tried to kill him, because John of Giscala did not want to follow Josephus's lead. He wanted to be in charge of the rebellion. And so now Josephus is in custody of the Romans, because he was one of the last men standing in his particular town of Jotapata. And so John of Giscala, knowing he's kind of the last holdout, asks the Romans to let them have one final Sabbath rest in the city of Giscala. And the Romans, who remember, are trying to maintain good relationships with the Jews that have been at peace and who want this thing to be resolved, they agree to this for the establishment of good relationships. But what happens is John of Giscala and his people immediately sneak out of the city and head off to Jerusalem to join the rebellion that's going on there. And so they sneak out on Friday night as the Sabbath begins, and the Romans don't find out about this until Sunday, when it's discovered that these guys had taken off. So they try to chase them down. Titus's pursuit force, because Titus is doing a lot of these operations for his dad, he killed about 6,000 of those that tried to get away. He captured another 3,000, which gives you a sense of the large number of rebels that John had under his hands. But he never caught up with John himself. So John will be part of the story of the fall of Jerusalem later. Now, the city of Giscala, by the way, was not treated as a rebellious city because of these escapees. The people who had remained in the city, they turned the city over to the Romans as promised. So Titus simply tore down a section of their wall. That was standard military procedure. And then took from them an oath that they would remain loyal to Roman forces. And then he left a small occupying unit and went on with his other operations. Now, news of the fall of the Galilee arrived in Jerusalem, and Jerusalem starts falling into competing factions for how to organize what remains of the Jewish resistance. Jewish gangs start thriving, and there are different parts of the city under different Jewish gangs. And they are being warned by a former high priest, a man by the name of Ananias, that they need to get these things under control, that they need to all get on the same page. But the rebels pretty much figure that Ananias is just trying to get them to turn things back over to the Romans. And so they do not like him. And that prompts them also to appoint a high priest that they can control. So the Jewish gangs promote a man to high priesthood that knows nothing about being a high priest. He knows very little about the priesthood at all. He's not really been active in that sort of thing. And that really gets Ananias upset. And so he and many of the other prominent Jewish leaders still in the city start fighting against the zealots. So you have a civil war going on inside the city of Jerusalem where Jews are killing Jews. Now, John of Giscala, who has recently arrived, he begins maneuvering for leadership of Jerusalem. And he does this by trying to ingratiate himself to both sides. During the day, he's going around with Ananias, trying to help him get the city under Ananias's control, pretending to support his cause. But then at night, he makes these little covert meetings with the zealots, and these are military zealots, not political zealots. Don't confuse them with the zealots from the time of Jesus and the apostles. Those guys were basically trying to accomplish their goals by political means. These zealots that we're talking about are trying to accomplish their goals by militant or military means. So at night, John of Giscala would go to the zealots and basically tell them, well, this is what Ananias is up to, and this is what we ought to do to deal with that. So eventually, Ananias figures out that this is happening, and he makes John of Giscala swear to him an oath of support in the name of God. And immediately after he does so, John of Giscala goes to the zealots and says, hey, Ananias is getting ready to turn the city over to the Romans, which was not accurate. It was not true. But this causes the zealots to send to the Idumeans for immediate military support. Now, who are the Idumeans? The Idumeans are actually Edomites who have migrated a little bit to the west of their original territory in Mount Seir, and they now live in what we would refer to in biblical times as southern Judea. They are all Jewish, even though they're ethnically Edomites. King Herod the Great came from this group. They've been Jews for, by this time, a couple of centuries in their practices. So they, many of them, are very fiercely loyal to the temple. So the zealots put out a call of support to these Idumeans, saying, you need to come up and help us protect the city from being turned over to the Romans. So a 20,000-man Idumean army comes from the south to Jerusalem. Ananias locks the doors of the city against them and tells them that they cannot come into the city unless they come in unarmed. And the Idumeans refuse to do that, and they accuse Ananias of being duplicitous for not allowing them to come in worship, but being willing to let the Romans come in. And then, strangely enough, that very night, there's this great big thunderstorm and lots of lightning, lots and lots of thunder. And Ananias tells his guard that's keeping the Idumeans out, I don't think you need to worry about them tonight. You can even take some rest for yourselves. Nobody's going to be moving around in this storm. Well, there were people moving around the storm because the zealots go and saw open the locked bars and let the Idumeans in, who kill the Jews on guard, and then they end up killing Ananias as well. And this begins, in the fall of 67, a reign of terror within the city of Jerusalem that is led by the zealots, trying to purify anyone out of the city that might possibly be pro-Roman. And when I say reign of terror, I have in my head the reign of terror during the French Revolution, where they had people's courts and things like that, and they were executing everybody right and left, and pretty soon somebody else takes over, and they execute all the people from the last group that was in leadership. And that's pretty much what was going on in Jerusalem starting in the fall of 67. It was so atrocious that the Idumean army said, this is not what we came here for, and they withdrew. They refused to participate this and left. Now, Josephus, who is with the Romans, reports that while this was going on, Vespasian was given advice by his military leaders that this was the perfect time to attack Jerusalem, because the Jews were fighting with one another. Vespasian responded by saying, no, this is the wrong time, because if we attack them, they will quit fighting each other and go into a cooperative effort against us. Instead, I want to just hang back and let them fight it out and destroy each other until they are so weak that I can step in and put an end to this. And that's the practice that he kept going throughout the winter of 67 into 68. The winter of 67-68, John of Giscala kept getting more and more control during this reign of terror. And that's why he will be so important toward the tail end. Now, during the beginning of the calendar year 68, the waning weeks of the winter, the 12th Jewish month, Jewish gangs outside of the Jerusalem area were going around and attacking other places to get their own supplies. And so Vespasian had to go and kind of deal with some of those little fires that popped up again in places up by Galilee and also over in Perea. Now, the Sicarii, which were the really militant zealots that had taken over Masada, they were running low on supplies, so they sent out some raiding parties to take over the nearby city of En Gedi, which, of course, was a Jewish settlement. And they end up killing about 700 women and children in the process and confiscated all the supplies. So the reason I'm giving all this information is so that you understand that there is a lot of turmoil within the Jewish community. And this is really a fulfillment of what Jesus warned about in his Olivet Discourse, that during this prophetic time period, a time period that had been predicted in Daniel chapter 9 about the abomination of desolation, which in fact was the Roman armies being near Jerusalem, that this was a time when love would go cold and people would fight against each other and hate each other and turn each other over to authorities to have horrible things done to them, and that if God did not shorten the time span of this huge event, that there wouldn't be anyone left alive. And so that's why you need to understand how bad things got. Now, Vespasian continues to bide his time throughout all of 68, waiting for the Jewish factions within Jerusalem to fight each other down to smaller numbers, but keeping the little Jewish outbreaks in the rest of the country under control. And then that's when things start flying apart in the Roman Empire. Nero is killed or possibly commits suicide in June of 68. And you've got a guy by the name of Galba that tries to take over things. And then Vespasian, when he realizes there's been a change in leadership at Rome, does what typically happens. He stops his military actions and awaits further clarification of what the next leader wants to do. So he keeps things maintained that he's got under control, but he chooses not to attack Jerusalem, even though he had been thinking it was about time to do that. But Galba does not have the support of everybody in the Roman Empire. So you've got a guy over in Germany, Vitellius, who gets sworn in by his people. And then you've got Otho, who tries to conspire with the Praetorian Guard to assassinate Galba and declare himself emperor. So you've got a little mini civil war going on at Rome. And that's when Vespasian, in the beginning of 69 now, because these little civil war things in Rome take a little time, but in 69, Vespasian finds out that things, even with Vitellius being a new emperor there, because now Otho is gone as well, it's still not right. It's still not Roman. And his soldiers convince him during the late spring of 69, you're the one that Rome needs right now. You need to be the new emperor. And so they swear an oath of allegiance to him in Judea. They swear an oath of allegiance to him in Alexandria, Egypt. They're going to do the same thing up in Syria. And effectively, Vespasian comes to power as the victorious Roman Empire of this particular period of instability. He becomes emperor in 69, the summer of 69. And of course, he needs to go off to Rome to settle these things up. And he's going to leave his son Titus in charge of military operations in Judea. He also leaves behind Josephus. Because you might remember, when Josephus was first captured, he was told by Vespasian, "I honor your strategy, your abilities as a commander, so I'm not going to just execute you on the spot. I am going to send you to Rome to be tried by Nero Caesar." Josephus's response was, "Well, why would you do that when I know prophetically you and your son will be emperors soon?" And so that was remembered by Vespasian and Titus. And so once it comes to pass, that is, once Vespasian becomes emperor, he frees Josephus and, for all practical purposes, makes him a military advisor to his son Titus in trying to get the city of Jerusalem under Jewish control. And so that brings us then to the beginning of 70, the calendar year that we know, which would be the late winter of 70, when Vespasian is going to head off to Rome, and his son Titus is going to go to Jerusalem, surround it, and bring it back under control by force. And this is the situation militarily at Rome at that time. And for those of you that have forgotten, Josephus, who is an eyewitness of all these things, is the one who provided all the information. Now, when he was writing his documents, he did depend in part upon Roman military records. And so this is what he gives. Eleazar, the rebel priest who had triggered the war in 66 by refusing to make sacrifices for Gentile people anymore, he and his forces had control of the inner courts of the temple. So the shrine building and the immediate area around it was under his control. John of Giscala, the guy that had come down from Galilee to cause trouble, he, who had been participant in the reign of terror from the previous year, he had control of the temple's outer courts, so the large areas surrounding the shrine, and he also had control of part of the lower city near the temple walls. And then we've got a man by the name of Simon of Gadara, who is effectively a warlord of Idumea, who has kind of stuck around out of his concern for the city. And he has taken control of the upper city, which would be to the west, and then part of the lower city near the temple walls. So that's the three groups that you have that are in opposition to each other at the beginning of 70. And then it shifts a little bit when the Romans show up. The Romans under Titus show up in the early spring during the first Jewish month of 70. They're coming from the north, and they set up an encampment on Mount Scopus, which is a nice overlook site on the north and slightly east of the Temple Mount. It's where Hebrew University is located today, and it still has a really good overlook of the Temple Mount. So that's where they set up their encampment. and they wait until the Jewish Passover is over. They don't want to mess with the Jewish religious festival. In large part, I think, is because they still hope to reestablish good relationships with the Jews that are left after this rebellion is put down. So they don't want to mar that relationship by desecrating the temple or desecrating holy days and holy ceremonies. So the Passover happens right around the middle of April that year. And Eliezer, who is the head of the temple, who has control of the inner part of the temple complex, he opens the gates for anyone and everyone who's Jewish to come in and observe the festival. Well, John of Giscala has his soldiers put civilian clothing over the top of their armor and their weapons, and they go in as if they are worshipers. And once they're inside, they attack Eliezer's followers, and they take control of the inner courts for themselves. And so Eliezer surrenders his leadership to John of Giscala, and now we've only got two competing Jewish factions in the city of Jerusalem. One of them, John of Giscala, has full control of the temple and the area immediately next to it. And then we have Simon of Gadara, who has control a little bit to the west of there. And both of them want to be the one that has ultimate control. And so they're going to be fighting with each other for a little bit longer before the Romans start doing their work. Well, we'll get back on this tomorrow.